First of all, thank you very much, Simon, for using my name and youth in the same sentence. It's really terrific. Thank you, Frasita, for the opportunity to be here. You know, I was thinking about that in terms of NAGG, and I've been here 2.5 years ago. 2.5 years ago, if I watched Utopia, I would not have understood what was going on. Now I understand it. But the best thing is the other night, they actually had NAGG in Utopia. So both were involved. So it's really been an amazing couple years, but, you know, I think it's just beginning. What I want to do today is really talk a little bit about how AEMO is thinking about the future of energy in Australia and what we're doing to prepare for it. So let me begin with what I think would be a familiar slide to anyone who is in business anywhere in the world today, but particularly infrastructure businesses. Because I think for all of us, we're seeing these external factors that are happening to us fast and furious, and we have to manage through. For us at AEMO, we identified several of these as that we think are absolutely very critical for us to think about. And I'll go around and I'll sort of then talk about how we're starting to deal with it. So let me just start on the left-hand power supply mix. It can't be news to anyone, I hope, in this room and anyone in this energy industry that the mix of power supply in Australia and really across the world is changing. What's happening in Australia is it's changing faster than anywhere else. When we go out and we talk to a lot of our international counterparts, they're amazed at the rate of change that we're witnessing in Australia, particularly given the fact that we're an islanded power system compared to other power systems. So that's really the change from synchronous to asynchronous resources, from big central station power plants to distributed resources, the emergence of storage as a capability in the power system, all of us, which is really changing the nature of how we have to design and operate the power system and think about it going forward. And it's really not even being driven anymore by policy. As you've seen, it's really being driven by cost. And that's really changing the way people are thinking about what they're going to invest in. The second is around digitalization. Anyone in business who doesn't think about their digitalization strategy is probably not going to be in business very long. The fact is that we can use data and information in different ways. We need to use data and information in different ways, and we have the ability to use it to drive really much better outcomes for consumers. And that's around even giving information to consumers, information for the power system. Studies have been done as if we put more and more information on the power system, we can run it more efficiently. Certainly, if we give consumers more information around usage, they can do energy efficiency more effectively. All of these things are around how we use data better and actually make it open. The third is consumer engagement. You know, we really are in a way of a two-way power system. Terry and Mona and I, who is one of the speakers, we were actually talking about this in the U.S., I think 7 or 8 years ago, as we were looking at how the changes of this is going away from central to distributed, and really what it means to have an empowered consumer in today's environment, particularly consumers, I'm probably not the target market, but certainly people in their 20s and 30s are so used to using technology and information to make choices and are actually frustrated when they don't have enough information. The third piece is sector coupling. And this is a really emerging challenge for the energy industry because as you think about electrification of vehicles, as we think about electrification of commerce, you know, we were talking about it today in my office, you know, when the power goes out now, you used to have like cash registers and people actually had, you know, cash, money. Nobody has it anymore. We're all using credit cards. So when the power goes out, commerce stops. And we have to think about these things. When we start thinking about electrification of transport, if you don't have a reliable power grid, you don't have a reliable transport system. Electric trains won't work. If you have big cities like Sydney, and people have to use elevators to get down to the first floor, they don't have access. So we have to think about what does this mean as we start coupling our built sector, our transportation sector, our commerce sector, when electricity becomes the primary resource. The other piece is markets and regulation. You know, it used to take us 7, 8 years to build a power plant because they're big centralized plants. we can build 200 and 300 megawatt solar and wind plants in less than 6 months. So our regulatory process is actually not as agile as the process of building power plants, and we have to think about how that changes. And then climate change and resiliency. You know, for AEMO, it's not around the policy of climate change. It's the reality is that every year BOEM is telling us the temperatures are getting hotter, that we should be thinking about 50 degrees in Sydney in 2030 and 2035. So when we think about building a power system and we have wind farms that are rated to be managed at 43 degrees, but we're at 50 degrees, and we have transmission lines that were developed 20 years ago for it in a totally different climate, we have to think about how are we going to manage the system in that kind of situation. And if you combine bushfires and other things that go with these kind of events, we have to think about a resiliency that is quite different than it used to be in the past. So we have to plan for that. And then people and capabilities. You know, for us, we are very fortunate. AEMO is a good percentage, and some of my best people are actually sitting over there. We have a great percentage of really smart and really young people who really are very want to work in an environment where they have a very clear mission and are able to deliver and they're able to be empowered and they can work very quickly to get things done. And so that kind of change away from a hierarchical traditional utility to a much more agile company is important for us because we want to attract the best of the best to this industry and we want to attract the best of the best of the best to AEMO. So all those things that I think every company is probably thinking about, we're thinking about too. And it really relates to our mission. So our obligation, of course, is our statutory obligation, which we're quite proud of, which is really it's very clearly set up in the national energy law. It's to serve the long-term interests of energy consumers in Australia. There's no ambiguity. We're independent. We're not for profit. We have one purpose. Now, we, of course, do that through members and stakeholders, but it's very clear on what that's about. Now, for us, what that means is how do we do that in an environment that is truly changing. And so what we did last year is we engaged in a strategic exercise and started thinking about, well, how the power system is changing and the complexity we're seeing in Australia in many ways leading in areas that our partners external to Australia internationally had just come to us because they said, boy, if you guys have figured this out, will you teach us how you're doing it, is to really think about, well, how are we going to deal with this very complexity. So it was to break it down into, well, what are the six areas of really core competencies that AEMO needs to be exceptional about and outstanding in order to deliver value to consumers. And we broke them down into six, and I think these six actually are really the six things we need to think about in terms of the power system. So the first is reliability and security. No question. You know, we always worry about price. We always worried about delivering affordable, secure energy that is also going to be sustainable. But we also recognize if the lights aren't on, if the trains aren't running, if the elevators don't work, that becomes a real problem. So how do we manage that through the system? So the things that we worry about and we're thinking about is, one, the real-time reliability. We do have aging infrastructure. We have coal plants that are getting to the end of their useful life or their technical lives. What we know around aging machines is that their performance does deteriorate. That's not because people are bad operators. Think about your new car and your old car. What runs better? What's more reliable? So we have to think about that aging infrastructure and how it's going to be replaced. But what we know is that with the cost of the system, it's being replaced very rapidly with distributed energy resources, with storage, and with large-scale solar and wind. The challenge for us is understanding as you go from synchronized machines that the system was designed around to asynchronous system, from 30 generators to 4 million different resources around the place. How do you manage a system across that? So we have folks who are thinking all the time about we're putting generators at a weak portion of the system. How's that going to affect voltage? How's that going to affect frequency? What complement of resources do we need to get there? When we think about distributed energy resources, we had a situation in Western Australia the other day. It was a cloudy day, so all of a sudden 400 megawatts of solar jumped off the grid. 2 minutes later, it came back. And so that's, we have to think about, well, how are we going to manage a system like that? That's like a generator that's just popping on and off. And that's not how the system was designed. So managing those types of issues are the types of things that AEMO folks are really leading the world in thinking through, how are we going to do that? The second issue is around designing the system. And it's really designing and thinking through, well, how are we going to make this change in the most cost-effective way? One of the things, as you saw, that we're really pushing is the idea is that we have reliability concerns. And if we can connect, for example, New South Wales to Queensland, we already have excess capability, and there's geographic diversity, we have an opportunity to actually take advantage of existing resources rather than building a new one. Think about it this way. We only need one major supermarket, and there's no road between my house and a supermarket. Wouldn't I rather have a road built than have another supermarket that I'm not going to really need very much? So it's that kind of thinking through, how do we create a more efficient system, and how do networks help? The other thing about networks is that when you have a lot of solar and wind like we do, you could take advantage of geographic diversity, of time diversity. If the wind is not blowing in New South Wales or South Australia, it might be blowing in Queensland, and we can use the energy there, vice versa. The sun sets at different times. All those things are important for us. So what we discovered is that on a cost basis, is we build out the interconnection of the grid, and that's not a substitute. It just makes the system that much more resilient. It's a, over time, we're looking at saving on a benefit to consumers. It could be up to $4 billion. And that's instead of just building local generation. So we have to think about it that way. The other thing that we talk about is in terms of adaptive markets and regulation, really thinking about how we're going to change the world. We are going from a system where every generator provided energy and the ability to be dispatchable and services that we need, like inertia and frequency, to a complexity of system, some resources like wind and solar provide energy at zero marginal costs, but they're not dispatchable. So how do we start paying for these resources so that we're accurately paying, and the market then helps us sort out what's the value of different capabilities we need in the system, and more importantly, how do we make the system two-way? Because ultimately, AEMO's role is pretty simple. We try to create the system in balance. We want supply and demand to equal out all the time, every second of the day. And if we're able to take demand off the system because we have microgrids or storage, and that's cheaper than injecting supply, we want that two-way bidirectional system to work because that'll make it more efficient and it'll be easier for us to operate. The other things we care about is consumer engagement, getting consumers information. As you might have seen, we've been asked by the government to put the consumer data rights into place in energy. We intend to do that very quickly. It's important to us. We want the consumers to have all the information they need about how they're using energy, and the ability to switch if they want to as easy as they can. We're in the 21st century. Let's get there with energy. The other piece is digital and data. This is a really important part for me. Again, the amount of data that we have to use to manage the power system going forward is quadruple, infinitesimally more than we did historically. One of the things that we have to deal with is to recognize that we're not just dealing with 30 large generators. We have millions of bits of information. We have rooftop storage. We have batteries. And we want to use advanced analytics. We want to use advanced computing. We want to be able to visualize things. And not only that, we want to make it very open and transparent. So one of our major initiatives that we're working on, I see Tim is here from CSIRO, and Darren's here from ARENA, is how do we create a digital twin of the NEM so that everyone has the same level of information. As people are investing into the system, they can get as much information as they need as to make the best investment decisions, and policymakers can actually understand the consequences of the decision. So this is how we want to use advanced computing to actually make for better decision-making, better action, and a much more smarter power system. The other thing that we're working, of course, is people and culture. And you know, I am really fortunate as a CEO. I do think I run one of the smartest companies in the country. We have terrific people, but we want them to feel that they have every capability, every ability to deliver on what they'd like to do, which is really serving energy consumers in Australia. So that's what it's all about. So let me talk about now how we put that into action with something like the ESOO and why these things are all important, so important. So we did, as we always did, our study, which is a 10-year forecast of what do we see that's happening in the power system over the next 10 years, what are our concerns and how we're going to address it. And what we found is that for this summer coming into Victoria, and in lots of parts of the NEM, we're very close to the supply and demand balance, the standard of 0.002 reliability that we use, which really says that 98% of the time we want enough supply to keep the lights on, but we recognize we can't be 100% reliable. The point for me is this. That when people think about that standard as, you know, that's a target. It's not a target, it's a floor. Once 0.002 reliability actually already assumes a certain amount of load shedding is okay in the region, but once you tip below that, you're actually beyond what most people would say is a reliable power system. And so those are the types of things that we have to think about as the system is changing. We used to have a lot of reserves. As plants began to retire, we ate through our reserves, and now we need to make sure we have enough energy, particularly in the summer months, to keep ourselves going. So let me just talk about how does that materialize. So in Victoria this summer, what this shows is our analytic framework of what it really means in terms of reliability for Victoria. So what this line shows is that for this summer, we're very close to a 0.002 standard. The problem we have is that 0.002 standard is met if two of the large power plants who are currently out on unplanned outages come back. If they don't come back, we're looking at a very significant risk of outages over the course of the summer in Victoria. Now I think about this is a probabilistic analysis. We go back and we look in history and our experience, and when you have major outages like this, this has nothing to do about the capability of the owners or anything like that. It's just big machines, and big machines are complex. And more times than not, when these big machines go out and they have very significant outages, in fact, our analysis says could be up to three times more often, they come back later than expected, not because of anything other than their complex repairs. And so here we are. They're expected to come back in December, but if it slips to January, we could be in significant problems. So we have to make decisions like that, where we shouldn't really have to be in a reserve condition. We should be in a much better position, but that's our concern because we're left with having to deal with these probabilities. If I think about it, it's almost like when the guys were last week in the U.S. when they were looking at the Hurricane Dorian, who was hitting the Bahamas and potentially Miami. There's 10 million people who live around Miami. And so what do you do 5 days out when you think the storm may hit Miami? Well, you got to get those people out of there, because if you wait till a day before, it's too late. Well, that's our problem. If we wait till December and January, when we might have better information around those plants, it's actually too late for us to do any much than we have to. So we have to go out and get reserves now. And that's the kind of discussion we have to have in the system. When we look at Liddell retiring in the next several years, we're in a very similar position once the plant fully retires. We could be in a position where we would say, in a potential summer, if it's an average summer after Liddell retires, we could have maybe 100, and I have to read this, 135,000 or so people out. If it's an average summer and one power plant that we expected to be on is out, or two or three plants are out. If it's a very hot summer, that gets close to 1 million people. And if it's 3 days of hot weather like that, and we have two or three power plants out, that's what we're looking at. So we have to start thinking about, is that reliability standard where we're really at the edge enough? Now, what happens in other jurisdictions, for example, in the United States, most cities, most regions of the country have a 1 in 20 standard. In fact, I think it's the national standard that's only once in 20 years they expect that we wouldn't have enough energy. In Western Australia, we have 1 in 10. That's also very similar. Here we have a mixture. And so what AEMO is saying is we really need to change the standard. We have to go from where we are today, which is a 0.002 USC, to a standard that allows us to say in 9 out of 10 years at least we have enough supply, and that could be demand or generation to meet the summer months. And that to me is not an unreasonable. In fact, it's not even what we expect we see in other international jurisdictions. So I think that's very important. Now, one of the issues that people have is they often say, well, that's really expensive. Well, actually, it's not. I think that's one of the things that I would like us to start talking about. You know, to me, the situation we're in now is the situation we're in Victoria, where we don't have an adequate reliability standard. We're left in the last minute having to go out to get emergency supply. The analogy, I tried to use health insurance, and I was told it probably wouldn't work in Australia because you have health insurance. The analogy would be like buying bushfire insurance when the fire's in the paddock. You probably wouldn't get it, and if you got it, it was really expensive, and it probably wouldn't work very well. That's sort of the situation is what we're in when we have to go out and buy emergency reserves. We don't like it. It's very difficult, and it's very expensive. If we had a system, however, where the reliability standard was around that with expectation in 9 out of 10 summers, we have enough resources. Our calculation shows, particularly when you could use demand, that's significantly cheaper than what customers value reliability at. And so we just need to switch that and make a little bit more sense of it now that we're at this point in the system. So in the ESO, we identified a number of actions that we think are going to be very critical, and they're very aligned with those 6 pillars, and actually, believe it or not, very aligned, well, I think you would, with Finkel. So there's nothing that we're saying should be really startling. The first is, again, we have to change the reliability standard. We need to recognize that given the reliance, particularly now, has become more and more dependent on electricity, having sufficient resources, 9 out of 10 summers is probably a reasonable thing to do. And when I say 9 out of 10, that's a probabilistic. We obviously want it 10 out of 10. It's just recognizing things break, and you probably, there is a limit, a cost limit to what you want to have for reliability. The second is making sure, as always, we look at summer readiness, but we're preparing for that now, but is really to say we got to change up the market. We really need to start thinking about the value of firming. You know, these power plants that, as we've been seeing today, in the last few days, where you had negative pricing, that wasn't because the cost of energy was negative and zero. It was because we weren't paying for reliability, the firming capability, the way we should. And so we need to start recognizing that resources that provide that important dispatchability need to be paid for differently than resources that are just providing energy. Resources that provide frequency support that we need to manage the system have to be paid for differently. So we need to change the system to provide a much more discrete and clear price signals. And we need to start allowing demand resources and efficiency to be monetized in the power system as well. These are all things that really, they're not particularly startling. And everyone, and international standards, when you have the level of renewables that we have, are already there, and we just need to move on that. And the last is we need to look at transmission interconnection. We have to recognize that investments like that in a market that is efficient is actually going to allow us to drive costs down, and that's where we want to go. And I just want to note again, you know, everything we're thinking about is recognizing that the system's changing. We have generators retiring, and our goal is to find ways to replace those retiring resources using new technologies, new capabilities of the system. So that in the end, what we're doing is driving value back to consumers. And the purpose, really, of our energy policy, I think, has to be all around that. Because as we recognize in this industry, you can't have an economy without safe, reliable, secure, and affordable energy. So thank you very much, and I look forward to your questions.